You're listening to Pete Wilson on BBC Radio Gloucestershire with the marvellous Bill Hook today. Bill, I said we were going to move on to your job, but we better finish off with sport at school because Tommy's was a football school, really, wasn't it? So did you have to play football?
Absolutely. I was school captain of a football team because in those days, apart from the Crypt, there were very few schools that played rugby. Marling Grammar School, soccer. Eastdean Grammar School, in the Forest, soccer. Northleach Grammar School, soccer. Cirencester Grammar School, soccer. All these people were soccer schools. And apart from the Crypt, I'm finding it very hard to think of another school that was a rugger school. I believe the Central was a rugger school. But apart from those two, I'm having a hard job at the moment quickly to think of another rugger school. So consequently, over a period of time, just towards the end of my time at Riches, these schools began to turn to rugby. And we had a wonderful headmaster who had come some 4 or 5 years before, a Mr. Veal, who was a rugger man. And the school, just after I left, within about a year of my leaving, turned to rugby football.
But you did well in the football, captain of the school team, and you went on for further honours than that, didn't you, in the game of football?
Yes, I got picked for several games for Gloucestershire boys, one of which was against Somerset boys, which we played on the Bristol City ground. And I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed football. And I remember after that game, Bristol City wrote to the headmaster and asked if I could go for a trial. But he declined it and had a word with my parents and said, at his young age, I think I was about 15 at the time. I think it was the under-16 side. And the answer was no.
You may have been an England football player rather than an England rugby player that we'll get to soon. I said we were going to get to your job. So what did you do for work once you'd left school then?
Well, the war started in the summer of 39. I left school at the Christmas, which would have been 40, coming up in the January 1940. In that term, a period of about 10 or 12 weeks, we had a school evacuated to us at Riches, George Dixon's Grammar School from Birmingham. They were evacuated down. I don't know how the headmaster coped with having another school in such old buildings as we had in Barton Street for Riches in those days. But we were, as it were, shovelled out to all sorts of schools. We used the Archdeacon School, we used the Technical College and other schools where we had to go for lessons in that period of time. The war, of course, had started and I left, as I've just said, at the Christmas of that year. When I left with some more of my pals, we were obviously directed into either Rotel or GAC or Hawksley's, and I was sent to Hawksley's, and I worked there for about a year, I suppose. I was called up end of 41, so I had about nearly a year there making a thing called the Albemarle. It was a glider which was used later on in the war when paratroopers were used. This glider was towed and it was used for those things.
Were they the gliders that were used on D-Day?
Gliders that were used on D-Day and at Arnhem, a bridge too far, they were used there as well.
So you were called up. What was Army life? Was it the Army?
Air Force.
Air Force, wow.
You can hardly believe this. I can't today. I reported to be called up, and like all young men, I had great ambitions of doing this, that and the other thing, but found it was all dampened because I was grade two. Can't believe it. A grade two because of flat feet.
Oh, really?
Yes, flat feet. But that, of course, immediately prohibits you doing a lot of things. And I had to go into airfield control work, and I was on airfield controls similar to Heathrow airfield control. Not so advanced in technology as we got today, but that is what I did. I did a course at Cramwell, the home of the RAF, and from there posted to various places around the country. And in end of 42, I found myself off to Africa. I travelled around Africa, various places, and ended up perhaps some 6 months after that at a place called Takoradi on the Gold Coast. I found that at this very large base, a very large camp, where aircraft were assembled or being assembled as they came in by crates to Takoradi Harbour, and being assembled there at Takoradi, and a Dakota plane would come down from the fighting that was going on with Rommel out there in Africa, and 20 pilots would come down and 20 aircraft would be ready for them, and they were flown back to be used there. And this is what the station was basically doing. I was also delighted to find that the station had a cricket team in which I played and enjoyed that very, very much. I was fortunate enough to go to about 3 gold mines playing against the miners. And on one occasion, I was staying with the mine manager and he said to me, are you married? I said, no, I'm not married. I was engaged before I came out. I hope my young lady will still want me when I get back. I know there's a lot of Americans in England. I'm a little worried. I was saying that as a youngster. But he said, well, in that case, would you like to go down the mine tomorrow with me and take your wedding ring back? I said, well, can you do that? Because I was very worried that he wouldn't. Oh, he said, if that's all I thought I was going to lose tomorrow, I'd be a very happy man. So the following day, down the mine, I go with him. I get the drill and I dig out some gold, and it's filtered in a big, huge filter pan. I can't honestly say it was the exact piece, but it's as near as you'll ever get it. A piece was scooped out of the pan, and a little native boy, I suppose he was about 16 years of age, with a bit of tin plate and some charcoal underneath, melted it and made a ring. I was very slow on the uptake here again, because the first ring he made was about the size of a curtain ring. It would have gone round my wife's wrist. And I said, oh, that's much too big. I was very slow there. I should have said, well, that's just...
What an honest man you were.
I should have said, it isn't quite large enough. But I said, oh, that's miles too big. And I showed him one of my fingers. I said, I would like it to fit there. And I brought that ring home, and that is the ring my wife wears today. We had to go to Mr. Preedy's at Truscott, the jeweller's, on one occasion, just after we were married, to have our things valued for value and purposes. Mr. Preedy was given this ring at Truscott's and took it back and looked at it, and he said, well, I've never seen a ring like this before. It's pure gold. Do you know that, Joan? And Joan said, yes, I do. He said, well, I've never, ever seen one. It's the first pure gold ring I've ever seen, and that is my wife's wedding ring.
Wow.
We were married in 1944, and from there I was stationed up on the east coast by Felix Stowe at a place called Martlesham Heath, a big American base from which some of the crew formed part of the 1,000 bomber raids that were then going on. And from there I was demobbed in 1946.
1946 it is then. We'll have some music and then we'll find out what went on after 1946.